Good evening. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I'm live tonight. Of course, you never know because when I'm not here, they play from the archives. And I guess it's hard to tell when it's really me or when it's just a recording. But we're live tonight, and I don't have a guest tonight. So I'm just going to be talking about a lot of variety of different things. And I'm going to give out the toll-free number, so if anybody feels like they want to jump in and talk, that'd be fine, because like I said, I don't have a real agenda. The toll-free number is 1-888-815-9756, 888-815-9756. I'll just be talking about some of the things that have happened and some of the things that are coming up. So if anybody wants to just jump in and talk and ask questions, that'd be perfectly okay. Well, the one big thing was we just had our conference. That's been 2 weeks ago now. Here in Arkansas, it was our fourth transformational conference. And it was fantastic. It was the biggest one we've ever had. And we're growing. We're growing in so many ways. My company, the Ozark Mountain Publishing, is expanding and growing all over the place, too. We've had to hire some more people to work for us. And I don't see any job recession in our business, that's for sure. People are really interested in the metaphysical information and the books and things that we publish. And we had 400 people at this conference. That's the largest group we've ever had. We had to move to a different venue because we outgrew the other one that we had for the first 3 years. So we moved to a larger venue up by the airport and had 400 people, and we had to stop taking vendors because we were running out of space for them. And as you probably know, our keynote speaker was Helen Reddy, the Helen Reddy, the singer. And we brought her all the way from Australia to speak. So I know the majority of the people came to hear her, but it was fantastic. She is the nicest person. She's very real. And she gave a fantastic talk, and everybody was just really impressed by her. And then, of course, it went on for 3 days, so we had about 13 speakers. Majority of them were our authors that I wanted them to get out there and get their feet wet so they could begin to lecture in front of people. And they were absolutely fantastic. One in particular that I don't want to call her new book a sleeper because it just came out, but I took a chance on it, and it is already going fantastic. We sold a lot of them at the conference. It's a book about suicide. The name of the book is The Other Side of Suicide. And when I first was going to print that book, I was a little worried about the subject matter. But the way she puts it together is just so beautiful. And she was scared to get up and talk because she'd never done anything like that before. I had her on my show back a month or so ago. It was her first time to speak anywhere. Her name is Karen Peebles. And she's just a housewife taking care of her children. And her husband died recently of cancer. But in the middle of everything, she began having her deceased uncle speak to her. Now, this woman is not into metaphysics. She's not into anything like this. She's just an ordinary housewife. Never studied metaphysics, never read any books about them. Doesn't even know about reincarnation, anything, about the purest kind of person you could imagine to have these things happen to. But she said her uncle, Uncle George, had committed suicide 25 years before, and she barely even knew him. But he started coming to her, appearing to her, and talking to her, and said she had to write this book about what it was like on the other side when somebody committed suicide. And she really didn't want to do it, but he insisted enough he wasn't going to leave her alone until she did write the book. That's not a very big book and doesn't cost very much, but it's loaded with information. And the response was tremendous at the conference because she is just so down to earth. You know, when she got up and talked, like, I don't know what's going on here, but this is what I did. And the spirit tells her what happens when you cross over, what's it like. There isn't any hell. There is no purgatory. You're not condemned at all. And I knew this through my work that I've done with the Between Death and Life book about what happens when you die. I knew that was true. But that's one of the reasons why I agreed to publish the book. But it's so positive. She tells what happens, and you're treated with great love. And they really work with the person over there to have them understand what happened and so they could be ready to come back. Because you do have to come back and do it again, no matter, you don't get out of anything. But still, they are treated with great love. And they're sent to a place that was called the Emerald City. I said it sounded like the Wizard of Oz. But, you know, green is the healing color. But they're worked with there. It's almost like a hospital. The spirits are worked with there so they can begin to understand why they did what they did so they can make amends when they come back again. And there was many interesting things about it. Those of you who heard the show I did with her, we covered it in great detail. But she did say as soon as the spirit commits suicide, right away it wants to get back into the body because it realizes what it did was wrong because you break a contract. It's wrong in that way. Over there, the spirits don't think of it as wrong. They just think you made a mistake, you took on more than you could handle, and they understand it. But it's not right in the fact that you break your contracts with other people that you made when you were coming into this life. So it's such a positive book. And afterwards, after her talk, we were selling so many books. People were telling us, some of them worked for the suicide prevention agencies. They were buying them up 10 at a time to take to the suicide prevention. And 911, was people that worked for them, were also buying up lots of copies to take with them. And there was always somebody who knew someone who had committed suicide, or they were afraid somebody might, and they wanted the book for those people. So we were a little surprised at the reception was so positive. So that book is The Other Side of Suicide by Karen Peebles, and you can get it through our website. Right now we're having a special on all the new books that have just come out. But on our website is Ozark Mountain, which is OZARKMT.com. You can order the new books on there. But I wanted to mention it because it was rather a surprise. And we said, well, we got a sleeper here that I think is really going to take off. And I think it'll convince her that she did do the right thing to write the book, even though she's very surprised at what's happening to her. Okay, but we had a lot of other speakers at the conference, and it went very well. One thing, I did a talk, I did a group regression too. I had two things that I did. I did the group regression where I put everyone in the audience under at one time. Now I've done that all over the world, and I've done it with groups as large as 70 people. And I think one group was almost 100 people, where I put the entire room in trance at one time, and they all go back to past lives. They go to meet their guardian angel, and he has a message for them. And then they go into a future life. I've done it all over the world, even with translators, and it's highly effective. But this was the largest group I'd ever done it with, 400 people. We had the auditorium was completely full. But everybody enjoyed it. They said they really had a good time with it. So you never know, you know, what's going to work out. I always hope that they'll they'll experience, all experience something, but a large group like that, I didn't get a chance to find out. Smaller group, we have interaction where they can tell you what they saw after they come out of it. But in a group this large, there wasn't time, so we just went on to the next part. But I did a talk on my part about Nostradamus and the prophecies. I haven't spoken on that for quite a while because I've moved on. A lot of you know I've moved on into the Convoluted Universe series. That's my main focus now. And the lectures I'm doing everywhere, all over the world, they want me to talk about the New Earth and the coming events in 2012. That's the main focus all everywhere I go. So I haven't talked about the Nostradamus in several years. But they were saying, maybe you should go back to that. One of the things that was bothering me, a lot of the prophecies have been coming true. Now, the books first came out 20 years ago in 1989. And we have done updates all along. You know, this is a three-volume set. It's a great deal of material. And all the prophecies weren't in the books because it was impossible to do the entire thing because there were just too many. I tried to be selective and pick out the ones that I needed to talk write about. Anyway, a lot of them have been coming true. We get letters all the time saying they're reading the book and watching them happen on TV, but the worst have not. Of course, which is a good thing, but we kept wondering, why is that happening like that? I know Nostradamus could not have been wrong. So what I've been working on lately is I've been trying to condense down the three volumes and put them into one volume, which is an enormous job. There's just so much material. And as I've been going back over them, he kept saying many, many times during the sessions that the future is not set in concrete. You can't say this has to happen, that all of the prophecies were open to interpretation, they were open to change, that man could change them, and he wanted man to change the prophecies. I remember one time he told me, if I tell you the most horrible things mankind can do to himself, will you do something to change it? That was his main concern, because he saw all the probabilities and the possibilities from any given action. And the idea was, this can be changed. And that was his job, was to try to warn our time of what was happening if you went down a certain path. So that's why he gave me the assignment. He said, I want you to go out there, I mean, write the book and go out there and tell people what will happen if they continue on this path. But you have to know what's going to happen before you can change it. So by now, according to the prophecies, we should have been into this horrible war with all the Middle East. We're in part of it, in a lesser version, but it was supposed to have been a horrible war with terrible things happening, and it should have been well into it by the year 2000. As it has happened, it's been lessened, and it's not quite as severe as he saw it. But he did tell us that he could see nexus points. When he would look at time, he saw all of these branches and all of them going out in many different directions. He saw all the probabilities and possibilities that could ever happen. He saw nexus points, and at those nexus points was an event or a personality that had to be fulfilled. They were part of the structure of time and of our future. They had to come to fruition. The Antichrist was at one, the great genius that was at one, the Bay of Pigs was at one. The atomic bomb was at one. These are very memorial events. But from the nexus point, he would see time branching out in many different directions, like branches on a tree. And he said, each one of these branches that branched out from the nexus point was a path man could travel down. They were the results of the nexus point, from the worst that could happen to the least that could happen, and anywhere in between. So he said it was up to man which path they were going to travel down. So if we chose to go down the worst, then the worst of what he saw would happen. But he said, if you know what's ahead of you, if you know what he saw, the absolute worst, then you could change it. You could go down one of the other paths where things wouldn't be as bad. They would be much lesser. Sometimes he couldn't take it away altogether, but he could definitely lessen the effects of what was going to happen. I believe that is what has happened now. That's what I mean. I don't think he's wrong. I think we have taken another one of the paths that took us away from the worst of what he saw. That's what I'm thinking it was. Because one thing he wanted me to tell everyone, and I started this 20 years ago with my traveling all over the world, talking about the Nostradamus prophecies, telling people what he was saying and what he wanted them to do. For the last 20 years, he wanted me to tell people, you don't know the power of your own mind. That if you knew what was going to happen, you could change it by focusing on the opposite of what he saw. The horrible events of what he saw, you could change them by focusing on peace and love. And that's what he wanted me to tell people. You just don't realize the power that you have. And he said, if the power of one man's mind is that strong, then imagine the power of group mind. If you could tell, have groups, he wanted me to tell them, just take 5 minutes out of your meeting, prayer groups, metaphysical groups, any kind of a group that was meeting for any reason, if you could take just 5 minutes out of the group meeting and focus on peace and harmony, it would make a tremendous change. Because he said, if one man's mind is that powerful, the power of group mind is tremendous. It's not only multiplied, it's squared, and it can perform miracles. And I've been delivering that message for 20 years, and it suddenly dawned on me, maybe it did have an effect. Because as we began to go into the time period that he said these things would manifest, they weren't as bad as he saw. We began to going down another path, that's what I believe, to where things were not as bad. And sure, we have the war, but it could have been a lot worse if we'd gone the way he saw. And I think now with our new president, it's like we have totally avoided these things. That's what I want to believe. People keep talking about the Antichrist. I don't know. Maybe he is still out there, but maybe he's not going to have the effect that he was supposed to have because mankind has changed their future. They have changed the way they're going to live and go down these paths. Looks like we're going to get out of Iraq, which is helping. They said the soldiers are leaving there. Of course, now Korea, we don't know what's going to happen there. In one of my books, we did talk about Korea. And at that time, that was 20 years ago, they were suspecting a threat from Korea at that time. And Nostradamus said, no, it wasn't ready yet. He called it the sleeping dragon. But he said it wasn't ready yet, that they had atomic power, but they didn't have the means to deliver it yet. They didn't have the delivery system. So at that time, he said, no, it's not going to happen yet. So maybe we have got to the point now where it is possible. I don't know. I certainly hope we don't go into that, because if we do, it'd be too horrible to contemplate. Maybe if things are going to be changed. I think it would be rather stupid of Korea to announce they were going to bomb Hawaii on the 4th of July. To me, that wouldn't serve a purpose. like in, you know, in December 7th in Pearl Harbor, it all happened by surprise. If you know something is going to happen, you're more prepared. So I just don't understand the reasoning behind Korea saying they were going to do it and announcing it, unless something else is going to happen on that date, and we have no way of knowing. Well, we'll find out soon enough anyway. But I still believe what Nostradamus told us about focusing on peace and harmony, and that can be our future, because he definitely wanted us to go into the time of the great genius with the wonderful things that he saw there, the wonderful inventions, the advancements in the computers, the way the human body will be changed, all of these wonderful things that we'll be going into in the time of the great genius and the thousand years of peace. That's what I think we should focus on, that, and maybe we're headed down that way. Maybe these other possibilities are falling by the wayside. Let's hope so, anyway. But I did give the talk about the Nostradamus prophecies, and I kept wondering what has happened, and I think that's on the right track. Some of you may say, oh, I'm just denying the fact that we made mistakes. I don't think so. Even if it was a mistake, it's a good mistake, because we're not going down the horrible path that he saw. Another strange thing I was thinking about that's been happening recently that I think goes along with the prophecies is the election in Iran. If you remember from the book, one of the most accurate predictions in the books was the one dealing with the 2000 election that we had between Bush and Gore. They said that was the most amazing and accurate prediction anyone has ever made, because in the book it is spelled out in detail. It was called the hung jury election, where he says, you would not be able to decide a winner. It would be so close. And that it would almost come to the possibility of a civil war because of the people arguing on both sides for their candidate. Well, you know, it was accurately predicted and did come true with our election. And according to what I've gotten, Bush should not have run that election anyway. He wasn't the winner. It was actually Gore. But the things that have been happening in the last month now with Iran, I think, and you know, that is also a parallel of what that one quatrain, that prophecy talks about, hung jury election. Over there, the same thing is happening. And it's a very powerful country, and it's a pivotal country into the events that he saw happening in the Middle East. Here, the same thing is happening there with a hung jury where they're not, the votes are so close they don't know who is the winner, and there's a lot of protests. People are angry about it. He told us many times that one prophecy, one quatrain, could refer to many things. It was not always just one thing, because sometimes events in history would be so similar, even if they're in different time periods, that he put one quatrain to refer to all of these different events, because they all followed the same path and were very similar. So sometimes he would tell us the ones that pertain to our time, but actually they were referring to many different times in history. So I think that's interesting to think. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe this Iran election is also another parallel meaning for the hung jury quatrain that had to do with our election in 2000. Interesting, we don't know. So, we just have to, these things are, it's like it's a living thing. It keeps evolving and changing. And we're just in the middle of it watching it happen, which is very interesting, I think. Okay, well, I wanted to bring all that out. Now, also, I have my new book. It just came off the press this week. We were trying to get it out in time for the conference, but we didn't quite make it. This book is called Five Lives Remembered. It's the first book I ever wrote, actually, and it's just now coming out, which is a long story in itself. But every time I do lectures, somebody in the audience will always ask, how did you get started on all this? How did you begin? And, you know, I try to fill them in, but I don't always have time to tell the entire story. So I always tell them I wrote about it in the first book I ever wrote, which was called Five Lives Remembered. And I actually began in this field 40 years ago. This was in 1968, a long time ago. So after we moved, my husband was put out of the Navy, and after, you know, disabled veteran, and after we moved to Arkansas, we had so much going on. My husband was in a wheelchair for 25 years, and I had a big family waiting for them to, they would go off, get married, and go into college. So it was about 1980 that I finally sat down and wrote the events that happened back in 1968. That was the book, my first book, called Five Lives Remembered. At that time, I was trying to get it published. But the problem was, the book was ahead of its time. What we discovered in 1968, when we were just first dabbling around in all of this, doing normal hypnosis for stop smoking, lose weight, one of the clients was referred to us by a doctor. He wanted us to work with her because she had having kidney problems. She was very obese, having kidney problems from overeating. And he just wanted us to get her to relax, my husband and I. So when we worked with her, she suddenly, inexplicably, went back into a past life in the Roaring Twenties in Chicago with the gangs. And it was like, what's going on here? And you remember in those days, there was nothing out about any of this. The only book even written like this was The Search for Bridie Murphy. That book wouldn't even be published today. It's too common, too ordinary. It was the only thing there was out. There was nothing to tell a hypnotist what to do if this came up. You also got to remember the words New Age didn't exist. Very few people knew what reincarnation was. They knew nothing about past lives, definitely nothing about therapy in that field. This was before all of that. You may think it's the Dark Ages now, but some of the younger people might not find that hard to understand. But in those days, it just wasn't out there. Nobody knew about it and talked about it until The Search for Bridie Murphy came along. But here we were, dropped into the middle of all of this. By coincidence? I don't think anything is a coincidence now because the way it changed. But in that book, see, I let it go for so long because, I'll go back to that in a minute, okay. In 1980, then, I wrote the events of what happened. I had the transcripts. These are on those huge 8-inch reel-to-reel tape recorders. And I had all the transcripts, and I wrote the book. And I tried to get it published. I sent it out. Spent years trying to get it published. I went through everything that an author can possibly go through trying to get these books published. And it was ahead of its time. Nobody knew anything about it. There were no New Age bookstores. In the regular bookstore, they had one shelf devoted to spiritual philosophy and that kind of thing. There was no field of metaphysics. None of this happened yet. So the book was way ahead of its time. So I kept trying, and I had boxes of rejections to prove it. People kept saying, the publishers kept saying, well, this, we don't understand this. One said, now if you had regressed some movie star or something, that'd be different. But nobody's going to care about this. It's just an ordinary person. So anyway, I put it aside finally. I gave up, really, because nobody wanted to publish it. But I went on with my work, and I began accumulating the information that eventually became my other books, like Jesus and the Essenes was one of the first cases, and then eventually the Nostradamus material, the UFO material, all the other books that followed. So I did go on with that, and by the time the books began to be published in the late 80s, then we had arrived. This subject was known by that time. So the book just kept sitting there, and I talked about it every once in a while, but and everybody said, why don't you publish it now? And I thought, well, now it's too old. I've gone so far beyond that. I have done so much with my work that by bringing out this old book, people would think, well, it's beginner and things like that. So I kept holding it back and didn't want to publish it. But then it was just a few months ago, I was cleaning out my office. We're doing some remodeling in the house and going through the old filing cabinets. I found the original manuscript that I'd written. I asked my daughter to read it. Julia is the one who runs the office, and I said, see what you think. What do you think? Is it too old? Would people not be interested or what? So she read it, and she said, oh, Mom, this is terrific. It's got to come out now. It's a bridge book. It shows what happened when somebody had no idea what they were doing and what they uncovered. Also, she said, it's a time capsule. It captures the lifestyle in the 1960s when all of this was unknown and what happened at that time. So there's a big interest in the nostalgia part as well. But when we read it again, the amazing thing was everything that's in there is now, 40 years later, is in the metaphysical field now. Didn't even realize what we had. There was walk-ins before the term even existed, because Ruth Montgomery came along with the term walk-ins in the 1970s. Here we had them during these sessions we were doing with this woman back in the end of the 60s, walk-ins. She goes to the spirit side, talks about life after death, talks about the God source, as she went back through five different lifetimes to where she was created by God. Everything we found in there is now right in the mainstream. We didn't even know it in those days because it was like discovering it firsthand. And the amazing thing as I read it is that none of it has been disproven 40 years later. Nothing in there is any different than what we're discovering now. To me, that gives it a great deal of validity. It shows it was real. We stumbled across it in the beginning when there was no books out. Nobody could say you're copying this or you're copying that. Nobody talked about these things. It was groundbreaking as we found it all by ourselves. So now this is mainstream. Everybody talks about these kind of cases, but in those days it certainly wasn't. So we decided we'll go ahead and print it because it'll show people, especially hypnotists, what you can do when you're not afraid to take a chance. Because we could have gotten scared off very easily, but instead we were curious. We wanted to know what is this strange new phenomena we found here. So we kept continuing with it. And in the book, we even explored the Kennedy assassination, which had just happened a few years before we were doing this. We explored other mysteries of the time that people didn't know about, finding explanations. We found so much that you could do with the hypnotic state that up until then, we didn't know anybody had even attempted them. So it is a groundbreaking material. So anyway, the book has just come out. It's called Five Lives Remembered. And it even goes up to the end where my husband is almost killed and everything had to come to a screeching halt as our lives changed tremendously. So it's a story of my beginnings, how I started. So those who read my later books will understand how all of this came about and how it evolved. It's evolved tremendously during those 40 years. But the book is Five Lives Remembered, and you can find it on our website And here again, we're having specials right now on all these new books. The website again is Ozark Mountain Publishing, OZARKMT.com. Or if you're overseas, it's OZARKMT.com. So you can find out more, then I won't have to keep saying, people say, how did you get started? I'll say, well, here's the book. This explains the whole thing. All right. So anyway, we just got back from a class I did in Colorado. Right after the conference, I had to go to Colorado, and I did a class in Colorado Springs, and then we drove up to Denver. And there we had the INES show. That's the International New Age Trade Show of New Age Books. So we went up there to do business, because that's where all of the bookstores come in to order and anything new that comes out. I did book signings up there on the new book. So we just got back from that it's just been 2 days ago. But I do want to bring up some cases. There was one, and I don't think it does any harm to mention these because I don't ever give out names or anything, but I did one recently where definitely some people do not want to be healed. Now, they'll say they do. People say, what do you mean? I don't want to be sick. But they're actually sabotaging themselves. Now, some people want to stay sick because it's their identity. We all know people like that, that all they want to do is talk about what's wrong with them, the latest thing that's wrong with them. And well, I got to go to the doctor and all of this. They want that because they get attention that way. And it's rather sad because they don't have anything in their life to give them attention. So they make themselves sick and keep themselves sick so that they can get the attention from other people. And sometimes it ends up going too far and it keeps growing and growing until they end up with an illness or a disease or something that is really hard to fix because they've done it all to themselves. But, you know, some people, they like the attention they get. And if you were to take the illness away, they don't have anything. It is their identity. And they're not willing to give it up. Now, on a conscious level, they won't admit this. They'll always say, well, no, I don't want to be sick, but they don't want to really give it up. So every once in a while, I run into cases like that when they come to see me. And this one, when I'm working with somebody like that, it is very, very difficult because they don't even realize themselves what they are doing to themselves. But I had this woman just a few days ago who was getting ready for her third back operation. Now, this is one thing they, now if you know who I mean by they are the ones, that the subconscious, the higher self, the ones that I work with, they always say, if you don't find the cause, you know, because, you know, the ideal state of the body should be perfect health at all time. Any aches, pains, or symptoms of the body is the subconscious trying to tell you something, try to give you a message. You don't find it, it's going to get worse. And if you find the cause, it goes away instantly. But in some of these cases, they said if you don't find the cause, you have operations, it's not really going to help anything because it'll keep coming back. Or it may move around the body to some other place. But it's not going to get rid of it until you find out the reasons why this is happening. That's the problem. So with this woman, she was getting ready for her third back operation. She'd already had, a metal coil, a titanium coil put into her back in place of one of the vertebrae. Something went wrong with that, so they had to do another operation to fix that. and she's still in constant pain with her back. Now they wanted to put in an implant, a device, that would keep, would act on the brain to short circuit any pain so she wouldn't feel it. But they said the problem with this device, it would first of all give her 20% less mobility than she has now, and she didn't like that because she's having a lot of problems. But also they said if you were in the vicinity of a microwave or something, it could shut it off and you could die, which is not a very pleasant thing to think about. So that's why she came to me. She didn't want to have the third operation. She's already had many, many operations all over her body. And as she was telling me the different operations, I just said, oh boy, you don't have any idea what you are telling me about yourself. Because as my daughter said, people become so transparent when they start talking about the different things that have been done to their body and their different illnesses. You can tell immediately what's going on in their life. And it was as though she's been destroying her body. And a lot of times when I get a case like that, it'll turn out that this is their first life on earth, and they don't want to be here. They don't like being in the body. Or they have come from other planets where they had different type of body. I've had some that have come from the water planets where they were creatures like dolphins had complete freedom in the water. When they come into a human body, they don't want to be here. They don't like it. They want to get out of it. So a lot of the things that they do on an unconscious level, not consciously, they're trying to destroy the body so they can get out. Many of them have come close to death many times. So I've had many of these kind of cases. But in the case I'm talking about, it turned out that it was guilt. That was what was causing the back pains. Everything had been wrong with her. She'd been carrying guilt around for 20 years. And other cases I've had, it's been anger, suppressed anger, holding on to anger, creating stress. So I guess guilt can now fall in with all the rest of it. If you find the cause and you get them to understand what they've been doing to themselves, you can release it and let it go. The big thing is forgiving the people that you're angry at, that you feel guilty about. You have to forgive them, let them go, and then it's over with. You don't have to deal with this, and you can move on to a much better, happier life. Otherwise, they're just going to end up killing themselves because they keep destroying the body. I had one the other day. Hers, it was the liver. And she also had many, many operations. And the doctor said something was wrong with her liver now. And they were going to go in and do a very dangerous type of operation. It had to do with tubes and things kicking in from the side of the body into the liver, try to clean it out, and it was going to be a very dangerous operation. And they said if that didn't work, they were going to put her in line for a liver transplant. All very serious. So she came to me because she didn't want to have this done. And she'd also had many, many operations. So we got to the subconscious, the ones I work with. First thing they said, we've got to stop the mutilation. No more mutilation. They've told me many times, no surgery, no operations, no surgery, no invasion of the body. It's not necessary. They said the body is a miraculous machine that has been created to take care of itself and heal itself if we don't interfere. And if we find out why it's doing these things and what it's trying to tell us. So they always say the surgery is not necessary. Anything can be healed in the body once you understand what it's trying to tell you and where it's coming from. And I've seen thousands and thousands of people now, so I know it's real. Well, this woman, that's what they were, the first thing the subconscious said was, no more mutilation, no more mutilation of this beautiful body. And I said, you know, what am I going to do? And first thing it said was, stop poisoning the body. I said, what do you mean? They said, Tylenol. And I want this to get out to people out there. They said, Tylenol. Stop it now. They said that was what was causing the liver problems, was the Tylenol. And I've had doctors that have come to me as clients have told me the same thing, that Tylenol is extremely dangerous, especially for the liver. They said, stop the Tylenol. And they said, also stop all of the prescription pain medications. They said, it's killing her. That's the poison that he's pumping into her body. That was what was causing the liver damage. And I said, something like that is so simple, and yet here they're getting ready to operate. They're going to do liver transplants, and all you have to do is stop this junk that they're making you take. And when I was on a plane just a few days ago on the USA Today, they had an article in there, and it's the active ingredient that is in Tylenol, and now on the TV it talks about Percocet and some other the different names of prescription pain medication. It's the active ingredient that is in those and in Tylenol. And the article in the USA Today said they have discovered the leading cause of liver damage. So, you know, that's so simple, but we're killing ourselves by continuing to take these things. And when the woman woke up and she doesn't remember anything, and I was telling her what she said, I said, you've got to stop taking the Tylenol. She said, but the doctors told me it's the safest thing out there. Said, no, it's not. It is the most dangerous thing you can take. And the subconscious verified it. It said, stop it now. And she wouldn't need to have any operations if she just stopped it. No more mutilation on the body. So isn't it funny how things like that are so simple, but we don't see it, and the doctors get involved in the organ and the other parts without realizing it's something as simple as stop taking the medication. And I had another woman who came to me just recently. I'm getting a lot of these in the last couple of weeks. People come from all over the world to have these sessions, and it's amazing. I don't encourage it because I live in the middle of nowhere out here, and they're coming from all over to find out what's causing these problems. Okay, I had a woman just a week or so ago before I went to Colorado, who had heart problems. And, you know, usually the heart problems go back to something going on in their life because that is the seat of emotions. So she had had very a very fast heartbeat. And it was so fast that they were telling her, and they said at times it would stop for as long as 3 seconds at a time. And the doctors were worried about it. And they said they did examinations on her. They said, your heart is perfectly fine. The arteries are fine. It's just that its electrical system, it's beating way too fast, and you can't have it do that, even at night. And it was waking her up in the middle of the night. So they ended up putting in a pacemaker. And so she came, and that was one of the things she wanted to find out about. I didn't really know how a pacemaker worked. I thought maybe it kept the heart regulated and has to be in there. It took over the beat. But other people since then have told me, no, it's just there as a backup. If it begins to beat irregularly or something, it will straighten it out. Anyway, during the session, we got to the subconscious part. It's looking at the heart, and it says, poor heart, it's been broken into so many pieces. And she had just told me about her marriage problems, problems in the home life. All of that was what was doing it. She was carrying this around, and it was affecting the heart. All of the personal problems that she was experiencing in her life right now were affecting the heart. as the seat of emotions. So the subconscious said it was going to go in there and straighten it all out. And it was just symbolically, you know, saying it had been broken. But it said, we will put it all back together the way it's supposed to be. Soothe it out so she won't have any problems. And when they work on this, it just takes it a few minutes to get it all done. So it straightened it out, and they said she wouldn't have any more problems with it beating too fast, and it definitely wouldn't wake her up again in the middle of the night, because that was another thing that bothered her, waking up in the middle of the night with it beating too fast. They said, no, it won't wake her up anymore in the middle of the night. And they would smooth it out to where she wouldn't have that problem anymore. I said, well, what about this pacemaker? It's already in there. And they laughed. They said, oh, we could turn it off. But they said, don't worry about it. It's just space junk. And I had to laugh. Space junk? It's just in there. He said, it's not going to cause any problems. Shouldn't be there. They don't like foreign objects in the body. But they said, it won't cause any problems. Her body's not going to need it. But it's just space junk. So I thought that was really interesting about that. Okay, I'm going down a list of things here that I was just thinking I'd talk about because we're getting near to the end of the time. I also had an article that I was going to refer to. It was by Dr. Russell Blaylock. And he wrote it for this magazine, and he's a neurosurgeon. Now, this has to do with the swine flu. He calls it Frankenvirus or the flying pig flu, making a joke out of it, because he agrees, like I do, that this is something being manufactured and set up, and it's not a threat at all. When it first came out on TV, I said, oh, come on, give us a break. This is what he says in the beginning of this article. I was in the military during the first flying flu scare in 1976. At the time, it became policy that all soldiers would be vaccinated for the swine flu. As a medical officer, I refused and almost faced a court-martial, but the military didn't want the bad publicity. Despite the assurance by all the experts in virology, including Dr. Sabin, the epidemic never materialized. What did materialize were 500 cases of the Guillain-Barré paralysis, including 25 deaths, not due to the swine flu itself, but as a direct result of the vaccine. And at that time, President Gerald Ford called for the vaccination of the entire population of the United States. Now, they were killed. People were dying from the flu shots or being paralyzed. They said today, some 33 years later, we're hearing the same cries of alarm, the similar lineup. Now, my daughter, Julia, for 20 years was a nurse in intensive care and cardiac unit. After that, she had a 5 home health care organizations, and she would go out and look and visit the older people in their homes. And she said a lot of them would be doing just fine. They could take care of themselves. They needed some help, but there wasn't anything really wrong. Then along comes the flu shots, and they give them the flu shots in their homes. She saw so many of these older people die, not because they were old and were ill, but because of the flu shots. So she knew that too. She knew it then. And I have doctors for clients, and they always tell me, do not take the flu shot. They said, you don't know what's in there. One thing that's in there is embalming fluid. See, there's things in those shots you don't want in your body. So I keep talking about these things, so that I'm pushing people to go the natural route, go with natural healing, go with the herbal. The answers are there. You can find the answers there. And if you call my office, we have the names of several doctors who have gotten out of the regular medicine and have formed their own natural health clinics. And one I had on my show, Dr. Chapdelaine, is focusing on the autism, and they have found cures for autism. So these are the way I'm urging people to go, not these other ways with the surgery and all of the drugs, which all have side effects. Herbs have no side effects if you know what you're doing. I've had many people on the show talk about these different ones. So I'm just encouraging people. I don't say don't get an operation, stop taking your pills. I don't say that. I'm just saying explore the other direction. Go to a homeopath. Go to a naturopath. Go to an herbalist. Find something else that may be the answer, and it could help a great deal. I personally go to a homeopath, and I don't ever get sick, in spite of a hectic schedule. But anyway, I'm just trying to urge people that way. I work with doctors all over the world, especially in Russia, and they are all in the natural field. Okay, it's coming up to time now that I'm going to have to stop. When I started out, I was thinking, gee, what am I going to talk about tonight? I seem like I'm never at a loss for something, and it has filled the entire hour already. Well, I'll be back on again next week, and in August, I'm going to be going on a long overseas trip. I'll be going to South Africa, and I'm going to be doing my classes there, and also be going on to Australia again and do my classes in Perth. Anybody interested in the classes that I'm giving, contact our website, Ozark Mountain, OZARKMT, or call our office, 1-800-935-0045. Okay, everybody. Good night, everyone.